Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The explosion of on-demand taxis has become a thorny issue for the traditional cab industry. People in cities across the country are now using alternative taxi companies like Lyft, Uber, and Sidecar to get around. They use their smartphone to use an app to call up a driver who then comes to their home, and they usually prepay. Traditional cabbies say these app-enabled transportation services are sapping their livelihood. They also point to possible safety and security issues for riders. But last month, California became the first state in the country to regulate this rapidly expanding service. The state's Public Utility Commission established a new category of business called Transportation Network Company, and it requires these independent companies to get a license from the commission, run criminal background checks, establish a driver training program, and hold a commercial insurance policy with a minimum of $1 million in coverage per incident. So on today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about how these new services are competing with traditional cab services. Last year, Lisa Gansky organized a petition to get PUCs across the country to support independent transportation services. Lisa is an investor in Sidecar. She's also an environmentalist and an entrepreneur. She's author of The Mesh, Why the Future of Business is Sharing, and she joins us from her home in Berkeley. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Great to have you. And we are also joined by Barry Korngold. Barry is a cab driver and president of the San Francisco Cab Drivers Association. He says they're not against innovation, they're just against unfair competition. And Barry joins me here in studio. Hi, Barry. Thanks for coming in.
Hi. Thanks for having me here.
Nice to have you. We did invite the California Public Utility Commission to join us, but they said because the rules are not yet set in stone, they couldn't come on the show. So, Lisa, since you're an investor in Sidecar and you started this petition last year to get the PUCs across the country to support these services, just give us an overview. How do services like Sidecar, Lyft, and Uber actually work?
Well, they're different. Those two are different services. Sidecar and Lyft are the most similar, and then Uber, at least the principal Uber service, is significantly different from our perspective. But I can give a quick overview. Sidecar and Lyft, I think, are targeted for this idea of what we call on-demand ride sharing. So the idea that most of the cars on the road are actually just one person in the car, and that if we think about it kind of like Southwest Airlines or any other kind of transportation service, it's the idea is here to fill the seats. And so how do we actually become more efficient with the cars that are already moving around by simply putting more people in them and taking cars off the road? And Uber is actually, I think of it as kind of open table for cars, which is the way that it got started. It actually sells a platform to the town car services who then basically, for example, if a town car drops off a client and is now hanging around for a few hours, that is perishable opportunity to turn into a valuable service for someone else. And so the Uber service, the principal Uber service, allows us to tap into that kind of idle capacity or excess capacity.
And Uber is now operating in 37 cities around the world, so these services are really taking off.
They really are. I mean, again, from an entrepreneurial perspective and also as someone who, you know, lives and works in the Bay Area, I look at these things as, under the heading of nature abhors a vacuum. And so as we see that there are opportunities that other services or parts of our infrastructure aren't fulfilling, and there's customer demand for different kinds of services, either price point or timeliness or whatever, these new technologies and I think some other things that are driving it is new kinds of pressure on our cities, with population being at 7.12 going to 9.6 billion people, most of them in cities. It's putting a whole kind of other level of pressure on how we move around and how we live and work together.
And I have a lot of friends who use these services, and basically you just click on your app And all the like, for example, Uber has information and you let Uber know where you are. And the driver usually arrives within about 5 minutes and it's prepaid. And I understand most of the time it's like $2 cheaper than what a traditional cab would cost. Is that about right?
You know, I actually can't compare it to the pricing of taxis in San Francisco because I haven't done the actual comparison. But I know that, for example, I do use Uber. I've probably used it in 5 or 6 cities in different parts of the world. I've used both sidecar and Lyft, and obviously I've used taxis in San Francisco. I think that they, for me, it's sort of like having different tools in the tool chest for different moments. So, you know, if I take the ferry in and land and I need to be someplace quickly with Uber, Lyft, or sidecar, you actually can see the relationship of the drivers relative to where you are. So you get a sense of how long it will be. And I've actually, when I've had to be someplace, can pull up a couple of apps and see who's closest or if the thing that you care most about is getting there fast or if the thing you care most about is getting there cheap. There's a lot of different kinds of opportunities to get from point A to point B now.
Right. Well, the friends that use it in San Francisco say it's about $2 cheaper.
I believe your friends.
Yeah. And that is Lisa Gansky. She organized a petition to get PUCs to support independent transportation services. She's also an investor in Sidecar. And Barry Korengold is a cab driver and president of the San Francisco Cab Drivers Association. And Barry, in late July, a number of cab drivers protested these startups at City Hall. Before we talk about why you oppose them, I understand you also oppose just the term ride sharing in general. Why is that?
Absolutely. These companies have gained a false legitimacy by calling themselves ride shares. And now even people who know they're not ride shares are still calling them ride shares. Ride shares are exempt from other regulations that other transportation for hire operators need to follow and fees. Because real ride shares are good for the environment. They really do take vehicles off the road. But real ride shares are not for profit. They have to be to where the driver is going already. They can't be where, you know, taking somebody where they want to go or to work and back. What these companies do is they take cars that would otherwise be parked all day, and now people are taking them and going out and being taxi cabs, quasi taxi cabs, without following any of the regulations and being able to undercut real taxi cabs by not having to have the same insurance or regulations that we do or safety inspections.
Well, now we do have, or we're going to have regulations in California, right? Because last month, California became the first state in the country.
Well, the PUC has suggested regulation light for these guys. So they're doing the same service as taxi cabs are, but with less regulations.
So what are your thoughts on that first, Lisa? Barry takes issue with the term ride sharing.
Well, sorry about that, Barry, but I actually think that ride sharing is a legitimate sort of subset of a transportation service, and that, for example, with Sidecar, there's actually technology that allows me as a customer and the driver to basically see what my desired destination is so that the driver can actually say, well, I'm headed to Palo Alto, so since you are headed to South San Francisco, I can take you there. And I think that you know, the notion is, like, for example, from the East Bay, after the earthquake, we had casual carpool. And, you know, there was just, it was sort of a de facto standard that there was only one destination. It was San Francisco, and you stand in line. And it was, to Barry's point, you basically didn't pay a specific fee, but, you know, we basically paid, if I was a rider in someone else's car, I was, you know, chipping in for gas or the tolls, and that sort of thing. It actually, if we had enough people, we basically just went over the carpool lane, so it was toll-free. But, you know, we chipped in for gas, and there was started to be a whole pattern, and that emerged into what's now kind of a community-driven service that's known in the Bay Area as the casual carpool. I think that both of these services have a sort of suggested price for the driver because it's not a lot of the mood and the intention here in both Lyft and Sidecar difference than Uber is that it's kind of like you're driving with someone who's a driver, a person in your community. So people tend to sit in the front seat. They tend to chat up whoever's driving. A lot of times people who travel to San Francisco use the service because it's known in within the, you know, the small, relatively small and growing sharing economy community as a way to kind of go native. So if I get into San Francisco and I'm not from here and I use a sidecar or a Lyft driver, you know, there's somebody who's from the area. They're kind of a cool person that is tapped in that I can ask a bunch of questions to.
I actually do that in cabs.
Yeah, I would like to respond to this before you go on too much. For one thing, taxis also have the same technology. They've actually had it before Uber, sidecar, or Lyft were in existence.
Actually have apps?
Yes, we have an app called Cabulous. It's actually called Flywheel. It was originally called Cabulous. There's also Taxi Magic.
Is this widely used? Because this is one thing I hear from a lot of people is that I can't get a cab.
Well,
here's
the thing. We don't have millions of dollars in venture capitalists for a slick PR campaign. All right, so we're relying on the MTA, which, you know, the wheels move slowly and they're not, you know, aren't always doing the right thing. But we do have more than half of the cabs now in San Francisco are on Flywheel, and that's increasing. I take exception to this claim that Lyft drivers or these other drivers are community drivers as opposed to taxi drivers. What are we? We're not peers. We're not part of the community. We grew up here, too. I was born around here. I've been driving a cab in the Bay Area since 1979. So I get very offended when I hear that.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a fair comment. I think that the point of view from the companies and the way that the service is positioned and is essentially and the experience is, you know, most of the people who are passengers sit in the front seat, and the mood of the conversation is just very different than and San Francisco, frankly, is a much more friendly taxi cab experience than, you know, say New York or Washington D.C. And so this is sort of more of a global comment, not specific necessarily just to San Francisco. And then to your second point, I'm a geek. You know, I've actually been an entrepreneur. I wrote the book because I was kind of observing this trend emerging in 2008 and 9, and the book came out in 2010. I was tracking companies just because I was really interested in this, you know, how cities are going to take care of all of us as we get, you know, so many people inside of these little spaces. And Cabulous and Taxi Magic are both two apps that I've tried in the past. And I think that maybe you do have a marketing problem, but it's also that, you know, if the network isn't really working, then it, as a customer, it's a problem because, and, you know,
Lisa, I just got to jump in here real quick because we already have full lines and I didn't even give out the phone number.
Oh, wow.
So I want to get to callers. That is Lisa Gansky. She's organized a petition to get PUCs across the country to support independent transportation services. We did invite the California PUC to join us. California just became the first state in the country to regulate independent taxi services, but they declined to join us because they said that the regulations are not officially on the books yet. Lisa Gansky is an investor in Sidecar, and she's author of The Mesh, Why the Future of Business is Sharing, and Barry Korengold is a cab driver and president of the San Francisco Cab Drivers Association. In late July, they protested these startups at City Hall. And we've got full lines, but we'll have one open in a few minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. I promise I'll get to you, Barry. I just want to take a few calls.
I had a comment to make to what she just said. We're not against the technology, and we feel that Flywheel and Taxi Magic can be improved. However, why don't you guys use your technology with legal cabs? What we object to is that the legal cabs have to follow all these regulations, and these companies have become in existence and popular by breaking the law and just refusing to follow the law and been able to undercut the prices of regular cabs. So it's unfair competition is basically what we're upset about. You know, let's all play by the same rules.
Well, okay. And our view is, of course, they're different services. There's a There's a shared use mobility summit coming to San Francisco with people this week on Thursday and Friday with people from all over the world. Shared mobility and new kinds of systems and platforms are taking shape all over the world in cities all over the world. And I
cab drivers, cabs share the rides with their passengers also.
Mayor Lee has taken a position very strong in support of innovation and the sharing economy, and so has the California PUC in been open to new models that actually satisfy customers, whether they're residents or travelers.
Let me get to a few callers because we have so many on the line. Let's hear from Paul in San Francisco. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thank you. So let's see. I'm biased in two different ways. I've been for my work, I drive every day, and my nemesis is cab drivers. The vast majority of them are horrible drivers, and as a cab rider, most of them have horrible personalities. That being said, I use Uber, and I cringed when I heard that Jeff Bezos was a primary funder, because if you want to see what he wants to do to taxi cab driving, look at Amazon and what that's done to the independent book market. So that being said...
Well, I would like to comment on that. For one thing, as a cab driver all these years, I disagree with your statement that most cab drivers are either bad drivers or bad...
Stating my experience.
Well, one thing that I...
I deal with them every day, and they make illegal turns. One day I was riding a cab, and the cab driver complained about getting a ticket for making a right turn from a left lane.
I'm not going to excuse everything that cab drivers do, but these Lyft drivers and Uber drivers do the same thing. The problem is they're not well marked, so you don't know that they're Uber drivers or Lyft drivers.
Absolutely, and that is my problem with them. And then my real main point is, can somebody speak to what happens when one of these Lyft drivers gets into an accident and they are running a business from their car and their insurance company doesn't know it?
That's a good point.
Really curious.
That's an excellent point.
Well, what about that? California, one of the new regulations that's going to be on the books, would require these companies to hold a commercial insurance policy with a minimum of $1 million in coverage per incident.
The problem with that is they only need to carry this, they only need to be covered while they're providing these services. Otherwise, they can rely on their personal insurance, which allows them to have a lesser, pay less for insurance. And how are they going to decide when they're working commercially and when they're working privately?
Well, it's up to them. I mean, Barry, the way it works is the platforms, in the case of all three of the brands that we've mentioned, as Rose said, need to carry this insurance. It's an instance-based insurance policy that covers, so if I'm driving a Lyft car and somebody, you know, sideswipes us and the car gets into an accident, it's covered by Lyft during that instance. If I'm driving to the supermarket and something happens, it's covered and no one's in my car because I'm not working, then it's covered by my insurance. And that's the way the policies are set up.
And how do they know that you're not working?
Who's they?
The insurance company.
The Lyft, whoever the network is, knows that I'm working because I'm on and I'm in network. You know, the car is in network the same way that you have on duty and off duty. These systems have on duty and off duty. They're registered. Everything is managed by the network in terms of once there's a request open to pick up a passenger and then the passenger is picked up and in the car and then the transaction's complete and the passenger's paid and now they're off duty or back on for another ride.
You're not just working while you're carrying passengers. You're also working when you're driving around, making yourself available for passengers.
Well, and that's my point is, if you're in network, whether or not you have a passenger in your car, if you're in network because you've now said I'm open to take someone in my car because I'm headed to Palo Alto, then I'm under the insurance policy.
So how does the personal insurance company know that? Do they have access to these apps?
No, they don't need to know that because the prevailing insurance is the one managed by the network that I'm connected to, Sidecar, Lyft, Uber, whomever it is.
If you get in an accident going to the store, supposedly, how does your personal insurance company know that you weren't working or even know that you use your car as a Lyft vehicle?
I can't answer that question. I suspect that there's a straightforward way of concluding with Lyft or Sidecar if it was contested by my personal insurance company to demonstrate that, in fact, I wasn't signed into the network that took place.
Well, here's what happens is these drivers don't tell their insurance company that they're working for Lyft or using their car commercially, and particularly now when that law isn't even in place, they're actually relying on insurance fraud. They're relying on the drivers not letting their insurance companies know that they're working commercially.
Well, I'd love to hear from some of the drivers, because I have some friends who just became drivers. I'm sure we've got drivers listening. And we do have full lines. We'll have one open in a few minutes. But you can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Paul, thanks for calling. He also mentioned Jeff Bezos. In 2011, Uber got $32 million in funding from Amazon's Jeff Bezos, Shervin Pishavar's Menlo Ventures, and Goldman Sachs. So thank you for calling in, Paul. Let's go next to KDF in Oakland. Hi, KDF.
Hi, thank you for doing this show that I wrote to you about so long ago. You know, I drove a San Francisco taxi cab for 23 years, and I'm an excellent driver. If you weren't an excellent driver, you would be fired by your cab company. These illegal cab operations are not sharing or greening anything. They're using huge sums of money from people and companies with no transportation background or interest, and they're cheating professional taxi cab drivers out of their livelihood under the guise of convenience or impatience. I've never heard of any commercial liability insurance company willing to sell part-time insurance. You know, rules are not functioning yet, according to the PUC. So we have one group, San Francisco taxi cab drivers, who have to follow stringent rules, and these illegal cabs who currently follow no rules. Passengers aren't even currently covered if there is an accident. You know, in addition to robbing cabbies blind, why should these cars stop at stop signs or red lights? Their scheme is evil, and the big money cheaters behind it should have been barred from operating here, just like they were barred from New York City. You know, it really begs the question, who have they paid off?
They've actually been barred from every city in the country.
What do you mean?
No, they have.
Well, what city has allowed these guys to operate?
No, they haven't been barred from every city. Let me tell you.
They've not been allowed.
No, actually, that's not correct.
What city?
Okay, let me give a bigger picture, possibly, which is that the world is changing, and technology is changing the way that we access all sorts of services. It's affecting food. It's affecting transportation in all different ways, where we stay, how we work, where we work, how we get from different places, all sorts of aspects of our life. And cities around the world, have been adopting different forms of ways to capture the opportunity of connecting people to what they want when they want it. And for example, bike sharing services that started really as a system in 2005 in Lyon in Paris have grown to be 520 plus cities around the world with growing and active bike sharing services, making bike sharing the fastest growing form of transportation on the planet. And San Francisco and other cities like Amsterdam and Copenhagen and New York and Milan and all these, you know, Paris, etc., Buenos Aires, are all trying different ways to deal with the customer demand and the pressures on cities with more people and less funds.
Lisa, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. That's Lisa Gansky. She organized a petition to get PUCs to support these independent transportation services. She's also an investor in Sidecar. Barry Korengold is a cab driver and president of the San Francisco Cab Drivers Association. We're talking about the explosion of these companies like Uber and Lyft. What do you think, and how will this affect taxis? We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW. If you have a perspective that you'd like to add to today's program, perhaps you think it hasn't been heard yet, or a question you feel needs to be answered, join us by calling 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can also send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll be right back.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Holly Kernan will have a conversation about youth curfews. Do they make cities safer? A number of cities in Northern California already have them in place, depending on the age. Say 14, the curfew starts at 8 o'clock. There's a proposal on the table to implement one in Oakland. So how are these curfews enforced? Who's actually targeted? What are their goals? And how would they affect you and your community? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line. feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the explosion of these on-demand car services. They've become a thorny issue for the cab industry, but the fact is they are taking off. Companies like Uber, Lyft, and Sidecar allow you to use an app on your smartphone to order a car, and in many cases, you prepay. In San Francisco, it's about $2 cheaper than a traditional cab. In late July, a number of cab drivers protested these startups in front of City Hall, saying that they're illegal and they must be stopped. So where do you stand on this? We still have full lines. Clearly, people really want to talk about this issue. We'll have an open line in a couple minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll get back to calls just quickly. I wanted to ask you, Barry, because I haven't asked you the sort of larger question. How is this affecting average cab drivers? I mean, is business down? Are they making less money?
Yeah, it's making it very difficult to earn a living. And the drivers, the people who've been following the law and paying their fees and having the proper insurance and vehicle inspections and all that, are losing. We're the ones who are getting screwed. I'd say our business is down around 50% by now.
50%?
Yeah.
And you say that's because of these companies?
Yes. I would say there's about as... We've been keeping track. We have a database of these license plates. We've been keeping track. And there are about... We've... Already in our database, we have about as many of these illegal taxis, was what I prefer to call them, as there are legal taxis. And that's not to mention the TCP operators, the Uber operators, who are doing on-demand service, which is the realm of taxi cab service.
I've taken a couple cabs in the last month, and the drivers say that based on a 10-hour shift, they're making about $8 to $10 an hour. And this was from four different drivers. Is that right?
Yeah, cab driving is a low-paying job to begin with. And there's an article I'd like to refer people to called Share Washing is the New Greenwashing. And it's talking about how it's taking regular full-time jobs and making a casual job out of it. It's not, you know, this is a labor issue. It's not just about sharing. And it's certainly not about the ecology. It's adding vehicles to the road and adding congestion and adding wear and tear on the road.
Okay, so I have to say something to that, you know, if it's okay. First of all, these are not illegal taxis. There's a different distinction, and whether you want to acknowledge it or not, there is, in the same way that, you know, downloading a book on an iPad or listening to music on without carrying around a CD is not illegal. The world is changing, and a lot of what you're upset about, I think, is actually a function of something that is happening around you and that no one on this call can control. And we are responding to, as a market, we're responding to customer demand and new opportunities that arise from new kinds of tools and technologies.
California Public Utility Code 103022 says taxicab service is on call or on demand over the public streets within the county in a motor vehicle, blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of other...
My point is
taxicab service, which is exactly what these vehicles are doing.
And we have a question from a listener over email who said, wouldn't it serve the cab drivers to download an app, use their own cars, and make more money?
We have an app. It's called Flywheel. And it's a matter of getting the public to know about it.
Because a lot of people don't know about it.
Yes. More than half of the San Francisco taxis are on Flywheel, and they're moving into other cities now. You know, with all this venture capital investing in these rogue taxi services, why don't they invest in a real taxi service and help
maybe,
the legal
maybe
taxis?
Maybe you should go to venture capitalists and ask them that, because it's...
Well, you are. You're an investor in Sidecar, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm asking you, why don't you invest in legal taxi service?
Because the first thing is no one's ever presented that as a possibility. No one has come and said, this is how we're retooling taxis. I mean,
I believe the MTA, San Francisco MTA, has put out a bid for for companies to offer services to design a service for San Francisco taxi cabs?
From a market perspective, there's plenty of people in the Bay Area with money to invest in all sorts of things.
So this is really about making money for the venture capitalists, then, not really for providing legal taxi service.
I'm not a venture capitalist, first of all. I invested a small amount of my personal money because I'm interested in seeing these services take off, or to learn what's happening in a way that, because I'm convinced that there's something fundamentally changing. So I've invested in about, you know, 15 different companies, from food to solar panels to all sorts of things around the whole sharing model.
I'm not against sharing. I don't think most cab drivers are against sharing, but this isn't sharing. This is renting or riding, providing rides for fees for profit.
The second thing that's happening around the world, and it's an example with something called the Freelancers Union, is that more and more people are working part-time or on their own. And it's a trend that's happening everywhere in the world, especially driven by the fact that, for example, in parts of Europe, 51% of the youth, people under 30, can't get a job. And so a lot of the, you know, if you look at the Airbnb numbers and some of the studies that they've done, a lot of the money that people are making are supplementing their ability to keep their car or keep their home. It's not that they're necessarily choosing to stop doing a full-time job because they decided that they want to do this instead.
We've got a number of callers on the line, so let's go through a few. And again, we're joined by Lisa Gansky. She is an investor in Sidecar. She organized a petition to get public utility commissions to support these independent transportation services. And Barry Korngold is a cab driver and president of the San Francisco Cab Drivers Association. They protested in late July in front of City Hall against these services. And we've got full lines. We'll have a line open in a few minutes. I'll give out the number, and then you can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, 866-798-8255. And let's hear from Ruth Ann in Berkeley. And thanks for being patient, Ruth Ann. Hi.
Good morning. I wanted to ask a couple questions. One is, if you, one, does not have a smartphone or gizmo.
Hey, Ruth Ann, can you speak up a little?
If one does not have a smartphone, is there any way he or she can take advantage by just using a regular phone or something if they don't have the
technology?
Let's just get the rest of her questions. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Ruth Ann.
And the second question is, I'm curious that there, that Yellow Cab and Friendly Cab both have ramp taxis for wheelchair users to access. Do any of these services, if one has a smartphone and can use them, have ramp accessible vehicles?
All right. Thank you, Ruth Ann. So, number one, if you don't have a smartphone, can you order these
services?
This
is why California says that for the welfare and safety of Californians, a taxi cab service is necessary. And that's what taxi cabs do. We service the people who don't have smartphones, who don't have credit cards. And in order for these drivers to earn a living and be able to do that, in order for there to be this service, you can't have another simultaneous taxi service that's operating under less stringent rules and being able to undercut those drivers. Then you're not going to be able to service the poor people or people who don't have smartphones or credit cards.
And Lisa, does Uber or Lyft cater to people who don't have smartphones, or is that the only way to get a car?
Or parked.
As far as I know, and I've asked this is a great question. I didn't catch the name of the caller, but it was a great question. I've taken the same question forward, and first of all, in terms of ramps, I know that all three services are, if they don't currently have them in operation, they're actively working to establish ways to have support for people who have the need for some assistance, whether, you know, whatever that is. And so they're looking at ways to distinguish a class of vehicle within their fleet, you know, or their, within their current drivers, to be able to support those sorts of passengers. With respect to the smartphone question, there are actually technologies that are being tested, but as far as I know, are not part yet of the network, that allow for a text-based request to happen. So the way it works, and it works in other countries with other services, for example, actually in Paris with taxis, you simply text with any phone, and you get a response back where the driver will be. In that case, it works the same way as a taxi. You pay cash.
or a credit card, but it's not that you need an account. And then I think that all three companies are looking at ways to include, you know, people who this is not driven by an interest for exclusion. It's driven out of an interest to fulfill a need. And so to Barry's point, I think it's totally true that, you know, people who are, you know, for whom taxis are a more convenient or more appropriate solution, that goes back to my earlier point, which is I feel like what's happening here is we're having many different ways of getting from point A to point B, including bike sharing and walking and taxis and Uber and all these things. And people will have choices and consumer choice.
All right, Lisa, we have to go back to calls because we have a lot of people patiently waiting. Thank you for calling in, Ruthann. Let's go next to Nicole in San Francisco. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Yes, my name is Nicole, and I drive for Luxor Cab. And I have many, many complaints about the ride-sharing drivers, that they don't know where they're going. The passengers say that they don't want to spend their money and time giving them directions. Many young women telling me that guys are out there with their pink mustache cars and they're trying to pick up on them, flirting with them. And it really is a problem. And also the fact that, you know, you see all of these Jaguars now and Hummers, the dealer plates, all of these expensive cars are being paid with the money that they're making, you know, off our backs, because we pay a gate. They don't have to pay a gate. So these people are just driving around, paying for their expensive cars, picking up on people. It is not this community crap that this lady's trying to tell us. And, you know, bike ride sharing in France, I don't know why we're wasting our time talking about that. This is the real issue. And if people have issues with bad cab drivers, they should call 311 and make a complaint. And or I know at our company, they call Charles Rathbone, make a complaint, the driver will be called in, we'll lose time, and might even be put out of service.
That's why taxis have big numbers on the cars, too.
And let me just ask you, since you're a cab driver, Nicole, we have an email from Tristan who says, I live in the Sunset and I can never get a cab to come to my house. I call and they just don't show up. I've tried different companies and they don't like coming out here.
Okay, well, that's a great reason to use Flywheel. I use Flywheel, and the good thing about that company is that when a driver accepts a Flywheel call, he or she must show up, because if not, the driver will be blocked for about 5 hours. Now, on the other hand, we sometimes on a Friday night will go to three different apartments, and no one will be home. So it's 45 minutes wasted. Mm. It's easier just to flag someone on the street, because people have no manners.
Well,
and a lot of them do, but they don't cancel. But this way, if the customer is not at the location, $5 is taken out of their account. So it kind of assures that we're both going to meet.
And so what are your thoughts on the apps? I mean, do you think that there needs to be a better system here? I mean, a lot of people don't know that taxi cabs offer apps.
Well, yes, we have these apps, and Flywheel is a very good one. They only use cab drivers, so that means that people can use their app. It's the same as, you know, taking the money out of their bank account, but they're assured that a professional cab driver will show up at their door, not some jerk who just bought an expensive car.
And there's accountability. You can call 311 if you have a complaint.
Thank you. And just quickly, Lisa, what are your thoughts? I've heard this a lot, actually, from women, that they do get hit on by some of these independent drivers. And my friend once called me, I think it was for Uber, and two guys showed up. And I mean, I didn't want to get in a car with two guys. I don't know. That was kind of strange, I thought.
Yeah, I think that's strange. I haven't heard of that, but, you know, if you say anecdotally you've heard of it, so far my experience in, like I said, six or seven cities around the world with Uber has been nothing but stellar. People arrive, you physically see on your map where they are in relationship to you and exactly when they'll be there. I've had trouble in cities all over the place. I mean, not New York, because you stand there and the taxi drives right by you. But in other cities where you have to call a taxi, you know, often they don't come and you're counting on the taxi. This sort of gives you a different kind of visibility.
All right. Well, in terms of,
you know, somebody getting hit on, I haven't had that situation.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Nicole. Let's go next to Natia in San Anselmo. Hi, Natia. Welcome to the show. Hello, Natia. Are you with us? Natia? Go ahead.
Forgive me for not knowing the exact broadcast, but I was listening to talk radio where a guy infiltrated the taxi service and tried to you know, got a job, got hired on, and he noticed a lot of corruption and taking advantage of foreigners.
In what, like in an independent service or in a traditional taxi?
He went through a traditional taxi service. He did a whole report on it.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like having these other options actually provides a way for checks and balances to say, you know what, this is what the community needs or this is what they don't need. But just in case this isn't regulated properly underneath, it's good to have these other services available to just let the chips fall where they may. And the chips might fall where taxis are there because, oh, well, you know, a wheelchair-bound community needs them or something like that. I have never got into a taxi and felt like I was supporting a grassroots movement or local money going to a local person. I've always felt like almost kind of detached from them, and then also that they don't drive very well. So I think that the more options that we have, the better. And forgive me for not knowing the exact journalist that did this, but you know, there's corruption. I have a best friend going through truck driving school right now that's discovering on his own means that there's corruption in different areas. And sometimes we need these little things to break free and let the truth surface and then maybe provide different laws for everyone. So that's all pretty much what I was observing listening to this broadcast.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that, yeah, we don't have millions of dollars in venture capital to run a slick PR campaign so that you feel like you're supporting a local person. But the cab driver you have, I guarantee you, is a local community person who is not making very much money.
There are often a lot of immigrants drive cabs.
Right.
I mean, I meet people from all over the world who drive cabs
right here.
But do you think, I mean, are there some changes that you would support
that
make the industry work better for
nobody's
people?
Nobody's trying to say that the taxi industry can't use improvements. It's constantly being improved, and the MTA, as much criticism as I have of them, they are making a lot of movement toward improving the cab service in San Francisco. They've made all kinds of headway in the last few years.
What changes would you make?
I would, for one thing, get more taxis on one app, which they're working on. That will be coming soon.
Oh, they are working on that.
Yeah. The thing, you know, we've been suggesting for a long time that there be a cancellation fee, which now Flywheel is doing, and it's working out well. Some of these things that the new apps have done are now being used by the taxi industry.
So, that's a really good point, and I think that one of the things that is happening here, and one of your callers just mentioned this, is we're at the very beginning of something, and I think the idea and what my petition was directed towards with the CPUC was to not kill the spirit of innovation, and before we even know what it is we have and what people are really in need of, we explore together what's happening, and I think that we're seeing laws change and policies change, and now taxis are benefiting, you know, from a lot of the exploration and the venture capital money and other things that have gone into this. And
except that you're deregulating the industry and competing with people who don't have to follow the same rules are competing with cab drivers.
Competition isn't bad. I mean, the whole idea that you're protected and that you're an incumbent and therefore there shouldn't be innovation, I think, is something that would make San Francisco a city that wasn't very interesting.
For one thing, nobody's saying there shouldn't be innovation. We've been constantly innovating. You know, the apps are improving daily. What we disagree with is unfair competition, that certain people can follow certain rules and other people can follow other rules, that there's a taxi
different
service that's where they don't have to pay, you know, the same insurance as we do or have the same vehicle inspections or background checks.
Well, we've got about 7 minutes left, and I want to get to as many callers as we can. So let's go back to calls. Let's hear from Charlie in Berkeley. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. I'm wondering how these other drivers are trained and regulated. Do they have a picture in the thing, you know, that if they're inappropriate, they don't drive well, you can report them? Or how are they trained in the... there's so many bad drivers on the road. Forget about the people generalizing about taxi drivers is not fair. But just how are they trained so that you could follow up if there's a problem?
All right. Thank you, Charlie. Lisa, do you want to take that?
Sure. Charlie, the people are So when I get into one of those cars, I know the driver's name and I know the type of car I get in. And at the end of the ride or even during the ride, you know, I can review the driver, the network, whichever brand it is, Sidecar, Lyft, Uber, take very seriously the review of their drivers and the performance of their drivers. And then from the standpoint of how they're trained, each company has a slightly different way of framing it. You know, they can be more or less rigorous and detailed, but essentially all the drivers need clean driving records. They need insurance. They need to have, be somewhat personable, like have a people personality. And they put them through a test. I would tell you that in the case of Sidecar and Lyft, I know that they have a long queue of people who are waiting to be drivers, and they go through a very rigorous test, and they're very focused on safety and trust.
And I've been in a few of these cars. They don't have their name or any kind of number on the dashboard.
No, they don't, in fact.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Charlie. Let's go next to Joe in Daly City. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment that, you know, I believe that these other companies than cabs have kind of spread it out of necessity from a lack of customer service. I mean, every time that from the cab companies, because every time that I've had to use a cab and called in, I've either been put on hold and then called disconnected and have the call back, or the taxi just never showed up. And it gets really frustrating. And so in a sense, it's like the cab companies have kind of done this to themselves. And using these other services, I haven't had any problems with them. You know, a friend of mine got picked up yesterday at, I think it was, he fell asleep at my house after he had a party, got picked up at 5 o'clock in the morning. We saw the taxi come up on the app, Uber cab come
See
up
their
on the
taxis.
App. No, this is an Uber cab, and came up and then picked him up, and he left. And so, and unfortunately, that you know, there's a need in the market for something else. And the thing is that you were saying that it's unfair, it's unregulated. Well, no one's making you be a cab driver. Why can't you switch over?
Well, a lot of people have been cab drivers for 20, 30 years already, and there's rules that they've been following, laws that they've been following. And it's not easy to just decide to go break the laws. We don't have millions of dollars behind us to cover us if something happens, like these other companies.
That doesn't address the question, which was if the driver's trying to make a living. I think the gentleman who called in's point is that the drivers can move to another system if they desire.
Because cab drivers who've been doing this any length of time know it's a race to the bottom. If you deregulate the industry, it's a race to the bottom. Everybody trying to undercut everybody. Nobody making any money. The driver quality goes down. The service goes down.
So if you've got cab drivers right now working 10-hour shifts, making $8 to $10 an hour, Lisa, what's the average hourly wage for Uber and Lyft? I've seen on Facebook $22 to $35 an hour.
You know, I have seen the same thing, but I can't. I would just tell you, I've seen the exact same thing on Facebook, but as an assertion, I can't say for sure what it is. But I know that it's probably averages out to be more than $8 because there's an informal system of paying, not with Uber. Uber's a formal system, but with Sidecar and Lyft, and like you said, it's supposed to be $2 cheaper than taxi. So. I think they're making certainly more than $8 an hour.
They have less overhead.
Well, we have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Larry in San Francisco. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Yes, this is Larry.
Hi, Larry.
Oh, can you hear me?
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Well, my issue. I agree with the gentleman from the taxi association, and by the way, I make more than $8 to $10 an hour or so, but that's not. But I'm significantly down. But my point is, and the young lady seems to miss this, the fact that the PUC is regulating this industry, and they're not ride shares. When I have a passenger into my cab, does that mean I'm a ride share company? I'm sharing my cab, but the issue that's being missed, especially by the young lady. Saying that the PUC is going to regulate this industry means no regulation. She doesn't know. I don't know if she knows the history of the PUC is supposed to regulate limos. Almost every major hotel in downtown San Francisco and most of the medium-sized ones, day in, day out, steal $50, $60 trips from cab drivers because they have no regulation. They do it because the city doesn't regulate them. The PUC does. So they're just free to do whatever they want, working with the...
Well, Larry, let me get a response from Lisa, because we're almost out of time. And again, we did invite the PUC to join us, but they declined because these rules are not set in stone yet. Do you want to quickly respond, Lisa?
Yeah, I would just say, again, you know, there's people who live in cities and visit cities and want to have a good experience when they're in the city. I think people can make choices for themselves. And the great thing about what's happening is there's the cities and the PUC and other organizations around the world stepping in to ensure trust and safety. None of these organizations want something bad to happen. I think they're trying to solve a real problem and a challenge for all of us. And the fact that the taxi industry is suffering, I think, is a great opportunity and invitation to step up and to reshape the business model and the way that taxis operate.
Final thoughts, Barry. We have a minute left.
Okay, this caller had made a very good point that by putting the CPUC in charge of regulation here, it's basically deregulating the industry because they have 5 enforcement officers for the whole state. There's essentially no regulation. They're supposed to regulate prearranged service, which is not on-demand service. On-demand service requires vehicles to be out on the road all the time, making themselves available, causing congestion and pollution, and require more regulation, which is why taxi cabs are under the jurisdiction of cities and counties.
All right. And again, we did invite them, but they declined our invitation. Barry Korengold is a cab driver and president of the San Francisco Cab Drivers Association. Lisa Gansky is author of The Mesh, Why the Future of Business is Sharing. She's also an investor in Sidecar. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Do youth curfews make cities safer? On the next Your Call, we'll have a debate about the impact of curfews. A number of Northern California cities already have them in place, and there's a proposal on the table to implement one in Oakland. So how are these curfews enforced? What are the goals and consequences? And how would a youth curfew affect you and your community? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Holly Kernan and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit YourCallRadio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@YourCallRadio.org.